From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. If there was a blue wave in Maryland, it was Democrats unseating incumbent Republican county executives in Anne Arundel and Howard counties and choosing a Democrat for Baltimore County. Beyond those races, the voters who showed up in big numbers did not make big changes. They kept incumbents as attorney general and comptroller and returned enough Democrats to the state Senate that the governor has to worry his vetoes won't stick. And that governor will still be Republican Larry Hogan.
To all those Democrats and independents who crossed over and cast their votes for me, I see some of them out there tonight. Let me assure you that I will continue to be a governor for all Marylanders.
We analyze what happened on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record, the morning after the 2018 election. Throngs of voters showed up at Maryland polling places and for the most part seemed to endorse the status quo. They kept Republican Larry Hogan in office, the incumbent Democratic Attorney General and the Comptroller, the incumbent members of Congress except for the newcomer in Western Maryland, and enough Democrats in the state Senate that Hogan will still have to worry about having his vetoes overridden. But not all the results were predictable, particularly in several county executive races close to Baltimore. We're going to discuss what voters said and why it matters with some keen observers. Malia Cromer directs the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center at Goucher College, which makes her the force behind the Goucher poll. Welcome back to the show, Malia.
Thanks for having me.
And Barry Raskavar is going to join us at some point. He's not here quite yet, so Malia and I will jump in. Is there a message in these election results? Because I'm not getting it.
I think there is one really big sort of theme is that Marylanders support divided government. At the same time that they elected strongly a Republican governor, they've also sent back a veto-proof majority to the Maryland General Assembly. And if you look at public opinion polls sort of nationwide, there certainly is some support for divided government. It slows the process of government down. It allows for deliberation to actually happen. And that sort of bipartisan message, I think, really did resonate with a lot of Marylanders. Hogan talked about it throughout his campaign, and this is really the expression of it, a Republican governor and a Democratic Maryland General Assembly.
Political analyst Barry Raskavar has joined us. He blogs at politicalmaryland.com. Welcome, Barry.
Good to be here, Sheila.
So I was just asking Malia what the message is overall in these election results. Thoughts on that?
It's mixed. We still don't know what the American public wants.
But if the Maryland, I want to ask you about Maryland voters in particular.
It's also mixed there. They vote for a moderate Republican governor, but beyond that, at least in central Maryland, where most of the population resides, it's pretty Democratic. In fact, I think if you look at the results, The most surprising outcomes came in Anne Arundel County and Baltimore County and in Howard County as well. You had two rising stars in the Republican Party who went down to defeat County Executive Alan Kittleman and Steve Shue in Anne Arundel County.
Kittleman in Howard County, both of those races were relatively close, 52-48.
Not, well, 52-48 isn't relatively close in my book.
Well, compared to Baltimore County, that's
the one that people are pointing to. The overwhelming victory of John Olszewski puts him as the rising star on the Democratic side. However, what's overlooked is that in Prince George's County, where there were no real contests because the Republican Party is so weak in Prince George's, but the new county executive is Angela Alsobrooks. She also is a rising star and has to be regarded with Olszewski as the two leaders, shall we say, in running for governor in 4 years.
Let me play a snatch of sound that Al Redmer, who was defeated by Johnny Olszewski in the Baltimore County Executive's race, on Fox 45.
And a big thank you, and a big thank you to Hogan's professional team that was in Baltimore County, Tori Laird and Jason Stein. I think Tori's all the way in the back there. It does an absolutely phenomenal job. And I feel especially bad for those public sector unions that put their necks out on the line to endorse us, to endorse a Republican for the first time in history. Case, the principals and administrators of our public schools, the Baltimore County Sheriffs, the Baltimore County Firefighters, the Baltimore County Police Officers, I thank you very much.
So I wanted to hear that because I was struck that he was thanking the Hogan team for their presence. Larry Hogan won big. Al Redmer went down. What's the lesson there?
I think the lesson is that that certainly Johnny O has a lot of appeal across the county. Here's somebody I think is able to appeal to the progressive base. They turned out in spades for him, as well as those more moderate Democrats that you see in Baltimore County. I think he was able to garner support not only where his home base is on the east side, where it broke really heavily for Republicans, but also on the west side of the county. And so that, again, we think about him as a sort of a leader for the party. That's somebody who doesn't just appeal to one sort of narrow part of the Democratic base. This is somebody who appeals to a large cross-section of Democrats. And I think that's what ultimately put him across the finish line.
He's also the new generation. That's what he represents. And he is this wonderful blend of old and new. I mean, his father was on the city, the county council in Baltimore County for 12 years. John Olszewski Sr., And people also like the fact that he's got a nice nickname, Johnny O. And you can't understate, something as small as that. But we'll see. He's got 4 years to prove himself. But he gets a lot of publicity as Baltimore County Executive, which is going to give him an opportunity to get his name spread throughout the state.
So do you think the same dynamic was running through all three of those counties, Baltimore County, Howard, and Anne Arundel, in terms of what the message that voters were sending or what they were looking for? Obviously, all politics is local. There were particular issues in each race.
I think so. Well, I think that Larry Hogan did a great job of distinguishing himself from the Republican brand, which certainly among Democrats has soured since the Trump election. Just because he was able to sever his sort of ties with the ties with Donald Trump and national Republicans, it doesn't mean that every single down ballot Republican was able to do the same. And the blue wave that did come to Maryland took out, I think, in unlikely places in Howard County, as well as in our Anne Arundel County, but also prevented the Republicans from being able to pick up sort of those five seats that they needed to break the veto-proof majority. And I think that has a little bit to do, or at least a lot to do, actually, with a national sort of blue wave election. Democrats were willing to send Larry Hogan. They were unwilling to vote for any of the Republicans.
It's interesting, Sheila, that Larry Hogan was looked upon as somebody who was going to take the Republican Party in Maryland and make them a true opposition party who would be able to challenge Democrats every 4 years. We're finding out that may not be the case at all, that this is just the magic of Larry Hogan as a Teflon governor, as a moderate Republican, because it looks now as though after Hogan, there's not much left on the bench. The people who were primed maybe to succeed Hogan as the GOP leader lost.
I want to talk about that more later. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, delving into Maryland's election results with political analyst Barry Raskovar, who blogs at politicalmaryland.com, and with Malia Cromer, pollster and assistant professor of political science at Goucher College. Let's talk a bit more about the legislature. It takes 29 votes
to override a gubernatorial veto in the Senate. I think it's 80-some in the House. As you said, it looks like the Democrats have held on to at least that many seats. What were the five senators that the GOP was trying to tick off to get rid of?
They only picked up two and they lost one. So the net gain...
The GOP.
The GOP, so the drive for five became a one rather than the five. Jim Mathias lost on the Eastern Shore, the former Ocean City mayor. He lost to Mary Beth Carosa, a delegate, and a former staffer to Bob Ehrlich when he was governor. In Frederick County, Ron Young, the Democrat, won in a landslide, which was surprising. Frederick County itself went Democratic. You've got a Democratic council. The county executive, Jan Gardner, was reelected. Ron Young's wife, Karen, was reelected to the House of Delegates. Gail Bates in Carroll and Howard counties, an incumbent Republican, she narrowly lost, which was a surprise. It was a shocker. Jim Brochin's seat in Baltimore County, the more rural parts of Baltimore County, he was a Democrat. And Chris West, who's a Republican, who was expected to replace Brochin, indeed won, but his margin of victory was much less than people suspected. So there's a lot of Democratic
anger. And
in
Howard County, there's a Senate seat that's going Democratic, right?
The Gail Bates. That's the
Bates seat. Okay.
Yes. Yes. So overall, in the House of Delegates, Speaker Mike Bush is going to pick up 5, 6, 7, 8, maybe even 9 seats, maybe 10 seats. It's not a very happy scene for the Republicans outside of Larry Hogan, whose victory was he ran up the second best winning margin of any Republican who has run for governor.
Malia, you're nodding vigorously.
Sure. What's really interesting, I think if you look at public opinion polls and you ask Marylanders over the last few years if they are satisfied with the direction of the state, the majority of Marylanders say they're satisfied with the direction of the state, and they essentially sent back the same sort of government that they had for the last 4 years. So if you liked what happened during the last 4 years, it seems, I bet you'll like what's going to happen over the next 4 years. You'll have a Republican governor who has to govern as a moderate. Particularly now, he's going to be fully in check by the veto-proof majority of the Maryland General Assembly. And you have a governor who is really in tune with public opinion polling. So sort of when you start to piece together the Hogan victory, one of the key things that he has that a lot of other public officials don't have is a really keen and deep understanding of where Marylanders are at on each issue, and then the ranking and how important each issue is. And he's somebody who's, I think, cares deeply about public opinion, which is why I've always believed that he won't make that hard right turn, because as soon as he does, he'll lose the support of the people. The Democrats who support him will turn their backs on him, and he's not the type of individual who wants to have a 40% or 30% approval rating in the state.
He's got the best sensitivity of any politician I've seen in my lifetime. He understands that he can only go so far in being a conservative Republican in a blue state like Maryland. And he is so sensitive to public opinion or even political opinion swinging against him on an issue. And as soon as he feels that, he immediately goes the other direction.
Will that weigh as heavily on him in a second term when he will not be facing Maryland voters again and may have aspirations to face voters nationally?
Well, we'll see. I mean, he's sort of blocked from any other elective offices in Maryland. Depending on redistricting, if he wanted to run for Congress. But I think what Hogan has to do now is decide what he wants his legacy to be. And this is a big question, because as a conservative Republican, he cannot get much done in Maryland because of the liberal Democratic legislature. So if he wants his legacy to amount to something, what's he going to do for Baltimore City over the next 4 years? What's he going to do about mass transit over the next 4 years, or roads, or health care, which is a huge issue? We don't know. No, we really don't know. He hasn't tipped his hand at all. And yet he looks like he's moving more and more toward being more of a conciliator and less of an ideological Republican, which is how he really took office 4 years ago.
We need to take a quick break here. Lots more to talk about the governor's race and some other races when we come back. We're talking politics with Barry Raskovar, who blogs at politicalmaryland.com, and with Goucher political science professor Malia Cromer. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass, talking politics this morning with Malia Cromer, assistant professor of political science at Goucher College and director of the Goucher Poll, and political analyst Barry Raskovar. Let me ask you about turnout. Larry Hogan racked up more votes for governor than anybody has. He outdid the million votes that Martin O'Malley got in his second run for governor. 1.2 million was the Hogan total, compared to about 910,000 for Ben Jealous, who had campaigned that he would get a million votes. Overall, what's important about turnout in this election?
Well, I would say for the governor's race, it really wasn't that so much about turnout as much as it was about crossover voting. And that was the key point. The Jealous campaign hammered home this point that when Democrats turn out, Democrats win. Well, that's not really that. Didn't turn out to be the case. If you look at, again, public opinion polls over the last year, and this is something we consistently found, when you have a governor who has persistent above water approval ratings from the opposition party, and you have a governor who hovered around 50% of the electorate throughout the entire year before, you know, even before his re-election campaign started in earnest, it crossover vote matters. So it's not just turnout. You can't assume that Democrats will just vote for the Democratic candidate. You have to give them a reason to. And Larry Hogan gave them a lot of reasons not to.
Yeah, Maryland has a history of, although it's been heavily Democratic almost forever, but it has a history of favoring moderate Republicans. You can go back and a long way and find a Mac Mathias, or a Glenn Beall, or a Theodore Roosevelt McKeldin, or even a Bob Ehrlich. So you don't see the tribal loyalty, the fierce, I'm a Democrat and I only vote for Democrats, as much as you do in a lot of other states. And that was on full display in many states last night. But Maryland tends to be somewhat different in that regard. As far as turnout's concerned, it was a large turnout, but it wasn't a gigantic turnout. I think what you saw really was something that sets up 2020. Conceivably, you could have a record-shattering turnout in Maryland because many people went to the polls in protest. They didn't like the way things are happening in the White House. Well, the man in the White House will be running in 2 years. So this won't be a signal. This will be a direct vote on Donald Trump. And the turnout could be just incredible. And we may not know the results then for a long time because the lines could be out the door at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night on Election Day.
How much of the crossover vote, in your estimation, was generated or shaped by the deluge of ads from the Republican Governors Association, as well as by Hogan's own campaign, while Ben Jealous wasn't on the air at all for a long time for lack of funds.
Of course, campaign fundamentals matter deeply in this race. You have a candidate with a $9 million plus war chest to be able to spend and to essentially drown out the opposition's message. But most importantly, I think that this two to one Democratic to Republican ratio we always talk about masks an interesting ideological point about Maryland. This isn't a progressive state. This is what Larry Hogan says, the land of middle temperament. And at the end of the day, you have about 25% of individuals who identify themselves as conservatives, and then a plurality of Marylanders who say that they're moderates. And so so ultimately, when the vote shook out, Marylanders felt more comfortable putting their votes behind a moderate Republican than they did to an unapologetic progressive Democrat. And to Ben Jealous's credit.
But in fairness, some of the pro-Hogan ads, not necessarily from his campaign, but painted Jealous as extremely radical.
Sure.
And that may not be a fair depiction.
That's the way of the world right now.
Of course, but I'm just asking whether that was behind a lot of the crossover.
I think the Hogan people were able to sort of set the agenda and to paint Ben Jealous, a portrait of Ben Jealous that was unflattering. And they did it early enough and often enough that it stuck. But I think the Democratic Party and the Jealous wing has a real problem going forward. They can win the primary elections in Maryland for the statewide offices if there are enough candidates that split the vote. But in a general election, they're still a decided minority. And the voters are going to walk away from them. They showed it this time. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Democrats get that message. Someone like John Olszewski blends, as I said, the old and the new. He would be an extremely formidable candidate in 4 years. Another run by Ben Jealous, you'd probably have the same result.
That's political analyst Barry Raskovar here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Malia Cromer, pollster and assistant professor of political science at Goucher College. We're talking politics. Why did Ben Jealous have so much trouble raising the money to amplify his message?
Well, I think the national environment made it really difficult. So if you remember, during the last part of the primary, he got this really big sort of cash infusion. It was around $1 million that helped him beat out Rashearn Baker in those waning weeks. But the money from these outside progressive groups really dried up when there were bigger stars in the arena. Went to Andrew Gillum in Florida and Stacey Abrams, I think, got the collective attention of those big ticket progressive donors. They were running against two Trump Republicans in their respective states. And those were just bigger, I think a bigger goal was to put them in public office, particularly in a swing state like Florida and in Georgia, which a lot of people back in 2012 were talking about being the new blue state of the South. And Hogan just wasn't a Trump Republican. And not only that, I think we talk so much about him being a Republican, but he's also a popular incumbent. And more often than not, popular incumbents during good economic times gain reelection, regardless of their party affiliation.
Also, Jealous turned off a lot of Democratic political officials. He didn't know them. He didn't bother to even meet with them. And a lot of traditional Democratic donors didn't like the progressive message at all. And consequently, they didn't give their money or their support to Jealous. It was, you know, historically, it was almost an all-time low for the Democratic candidate running for governor.
There's so much more I'd like to ask you about, but we are flat out of time. You all should read Malia Cromer's op-ed online on The Sun Now and in print tomorrow. Jealous did not so much lose Maryland gubernatorial race as Hogan won it, is the headline. Malia Cromer, assistant professor of political science at Goucher College, directs the Goucher Poll. Barry Raskovar has been observing and writing about politics in Maryland since 1971. He blogs at politicalmaryland.com. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Tune in to Midday at Noon for more on the election. Tom Hall's guests will be Baltimore Sun opinion editor Andy Green and Jane Miller of WBAL-TV. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you're with us on The Record. Come back tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.